Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson's Victor Bring. Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB. Inside MLB.
Good afternoon, Inside MLB fans. My name is Benson Fechter, and I will be your host tonight, this afternoon actually, on a wonderful Friday, August 5th, 2016. And we actually do have a special first-time listener, so I'll try to do my best for him today. And have a great show. And if you recall on Wednesday, at the end of the show, we started doing what I like to do, grading all 30 GMs after the trading deadline. We got through the first 16 teams, I believe, actually. And for today's show, at least for the first part of it anyway, we are going to be giving our grades out and analyzing why I gave the certain grades out to the GMs and to the respective team. Now, if you didn't tune in on Wednesday, I'll give you a brief rundown of what we did and what teams got what. Greats. So number one, Chicago Cubs, Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, they got an A+. The Rangers, John Daniels also got an A+. Yankees, Brian Cashman got an A+. Indians, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff got an A. Los Angeles Dodgers' Andrew Freeman and Farhan Zaidi got an A-. Boston Red Sox's Dave Dombrowski and Mike Hazen got an A-. San Francisco Giants' Brian Sabian and Bobby Evans, they got an A- as well. San Diego Padres' A.J. Preller got a B+. Miami Marlins' Mike Hill got a B+ as well. Washington Nationals' Rizzo also got a B+. Moving down the line, we have the Milwaukee Brewers' David Stearns, he got a B. Tampa Bay Rays' Matt Silverman got a B. New York Mets' Sandy Alderson also got a B. St. Louis Cardinals' John Mozeliak got a B. Baltimore Orioles' Dan Duquette got a B. And Oakland Athletics' Billy Beane and David Forrest got Bs. So we did the first 16, got about halfway through. And what I was hoping to do on the show today is finish talking about grading GMs, giving my analysis, and we'll go from there after that. So let's get into it right at the number 17 team. The Houston Astros and Jeff Luneau, I'm giving him a B-. And really, the Astros' biggest move was the signing of Cuban defector Ulysses Gurriel to a 5-year, $47.5 million contract. The best part of the deal is they didn't have to trade any prospects to get this potential impact back. Gurriel has started playing and should be able to help the Astros by mid or late August. The Astros worked hard at the deadline to try to get an impact starter, but never came close, either because of asking price or teams not willing to deal them in the end. And the Astros, they didn't really trade for anybody, but I think Ulysses Gurriel is going to help them down in the line in this playoff push, hoping to try to catch the Rangers, who are the AL West favorites now after acquiring Lucroy and Beltran, but also trying to make a wild card position. And that's why Jeff Luneau and the Astros get a B-, and I'm excited to see what Ulysses Gurriel does for the Astros later this month. Number 18 on the list, getting a B- are John Hart and John Cabalella of the Atlanta Braves. And really, the Braves, they were able to finally dump Hector Oliveira and pick up a right-handed power bat in Matt Kemp. They also got the Padres to throw in $10.5 million. The Braves will essentially have to pay Kemp for only 3 years at an average annual average of $8.5 million, which should be an affordable price to trade him to an AL team needing a DH down the road if it doesn't work out in Atlanta. The smaller ballpark should also play well to Kemp's power. Kemp is a below-average defender and is a low on-base percentage, but he definitely provides 30 homer and 100-plus RBI capabilities. And when this trade happened, you know, it was just a trade of bad contracts. Hector Oliveira with all the domestic abuse stuff going on with him, and then Matt Kemp struggling in San Diego. Just swapped the bad contracts. Padres paid $10.5 million, and Kemp, in his first days with the Pirates, he didn't really do well the first night, but games two and games three, he did pretty well. And the Braves fans definitely do like him. And his first at bat against the Pirates on Tuesday night, he did get a standing ovation. And he's always said he wanted to be an Atlanta Brave. He grew up an Atlanta Braves fan. And he has the potential to do well in SunTrust Park next year. Because just looking at the dimensions, it appears like it's going to be a smaller ballpark. And it's kind of funny because I was watching the Pirate game last night. And they were talking about, you know, this is the last game at Turner Field and everything. But Fulton County Stadium where the Falcons and the Braves played from 1967 to 1996, I believe. It was actually a small ballpark. It was known for hitter's power. So what the Braves did is they made a bigger ballpark. And the left field and the right field dimensions, they aren't that deep, but right center is probably the deepest part of the park and one of the deepest right centers in all of baseball at 390 feet. And that played big in the Pirates game last night, as there were a lot of drives out there. But Ender Inciarte and Starling Marte, they tracked down a lot of balls. So Fulton County Stadium is going to be smaller, going to play to Matt Kemp and Hart and Coppola. What their goal is to get a power corner out their bat, and they got that, and hopefully for them, it'll draw nice attendance next year. And, you know, if Atlanta, if it doesn't work out, you just flip him somewhere to an AL team that needs a DH, get the prospects, and everything will work out there. So I like the deal. That's why I'm excited to see what Matt Kemp does. Not necessarily this year, but, I mean, the Braves, they could be a decent team next year, but, like, you know, 3 years down the road, we'll see where Matt Kemp, where Freddie Freeman, and how they're all doing at SunTrust Park, which will be opening next year. So I'm definitely excited to see all that. Let's go to our next team, the Minnesota Twins. And Rob Antony, I'm giving you a B-. And really, the Twins, they were another team trying to improve their starting rotation at the deadline. They acquired left-hander Alberto Mejia from the Giants in exchange for their only all-star, Eduardo Nunez. They then showed some creativity in dealing with Ricky Nolasco and Alex Meyer to the Angels in return for left-hander Hector Santiago. Both deals made sense, and though they probably didn't get enough back in the Nunez trade, they made up for it by being on the other side of the scale in the Santiago transaction. And Alberto Mejia, he's not going to be an amazing defense, right? Eduardo Nunez has been pretty good for the Twins, and now he's on the Giants, and it was a good move on the Giants' part. That's why Bobby Evans and Brian Sabian, I believe, I gave him an A-. And really, I like the trade because he needed a starting pitching, but they could have gotten more from the Giants, and that's obvious. But they did sort of even out the balance beam a little bit when they acquired Hector Santiago, got rid of Ricky Nolasco, wasn't pitching well, and Alex Meyer, and I like Hector Santiago, the acquisition too. And really, they're not going to be competitive this year, right? But next year, we'll see how Alberto Mejia and Hector Santiago do. They're both left-handers, and they will both be in the starting rotation. And the Twins, for years, they've needed starting pitching. And Hector Santiago is going to definitely help out a bit there. I don't know about Mejia. He could do some things down the road. But we'll see how the Twins and Rob Antony, how he stacks up his Twins team for next year. It's time to give out our first C of the day, and that goes to Toronto Blue Jays' Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. It's not a C, but it's a C+. And at the beginning of the season, the Blue Jays, they were my pick to win the AL East, and they certainly did their best at the deadline to prove me wrong when they announced they were moving their ace Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen and replacing him with Francisco Liriano, whom they acquired from the Pirates after he led the NL in walks at the time of the trade. On the positive side, they picked up Melvin Upton Jr. from the Padres and Joaquin Benoit from the Mariners and smaller deals, which, you know, should help. This was a huge letdown of a deadline after last year's wheeling and dealing landed them Troy Tulowitzki and David Price. And this year's David Price for the Toronto Blue Jays is Francisco Liriano. And Francisco Liriano is no David Price. He was leading the NL in walks at the time, and he was pretty much awful in the National League Central with the Pirates this year. At the beginning of the season on April 3rd, he pitched excellent against Cardinals. He pitched excellent, actually, in July against the Brewers. Struck out 13, didn't walk any. But in his latest start against the Brewers as well, he did not fare well one bit. So they decided to trade for him, move their ace Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen, which did not make any sense because Francisco Liriano is not going to be their ace. It's just not going to happen. And the AL East is a whole different ballgame than the NL Central. You're not getting that 9 spot off. I know the Yankees aren't going to be as good. I know the Rays aren't going to be as good. But it's still smaller ballparks, and there are still some good offensive players in the division. So Liriano, I don't think is going to fare well at all with the Blue Jays. And I'm surprised that Aaron Sanchez is going to be moving to the bullpen in favor of Liriano. And this year's Troy Tulowitzki for the Blue Jays is Melvin Upton Jr. And, I mean, it was a good trade, right? But they didn't really need him that much. The outfield isn't in need of that much help. Melvin Dunphy Jr., he may help. He was having a decent season with the Padres. But the move that I probably did like the most was the Joaquin Benoit trade because they needed bullpen help, and they got that in Joaquin Benoit. So that's why I'm giving them a C+. It was a decent deadline, but not obviously, Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, they set our bars high when they traded for Troy Tulowitzki and David Price last July. But Melvin Dunphy Jr., Liriano, and Benoit, obviously not the same, but still decent and still going to help them down the line in the playoff push. But I do not think Aaron Sanchez should be moved to the bullpen because I understand we all remember Steven Strasburg being shut down. And the reason they shut him down is because, you know, the Nationals had a future to contend. Okay, if we don't win it this year, we'll win it next year. So on and so forth. But the Blue Jays, they have to capitalize now. Their window of opportunity is closing, and it's closing fast. Let's be honest here. They're not going to re-sign Jose Bautista. They're not going to be able to sign Edwin Encarnacion, and it's just not going to happen. So you're losing two of your best offensive players and who have been corner pieces of your franchise. I understand you're still going to have Tulowitzki. You're still going to have Melvin Upton Jr., Josh Donaldson. And it's still going to be pretty decent. But Aaron Sanchez is going to help them in this playoff push if he was to continue to be their ace. They need to win the division. I do not think that Liriano is going to be – well, Jay Happ, he'll probably pitch in the wild card game. But to be honest, Aaron Sanchez has been there. He's been the ace. And Jay Happ is now going to have to elevate himself to be even better. He's 15-3 this year, won 9 in a row, and he's just going to have to be that much better. And that's going to be hard for him. And the Blue Jays' management, I don't think they're being smart because the window of opportunity is closing. And the Blue Jays know that. I mean, they made the playoffs for the first time in a while last year, and they do not want to not make the playoffs after this year. So it doesn't make sense to me. All of Canada is counting on them, and we'll see how Liriano, I don't think he'll do well. Melvin Dunphy Jr., Benoit, fair down the stretch for the Blue Jays because they're not going to need to step it up if they do have a chance of making the postseason this year. I don't think it's going to happen, but there is definitely still a chance at that wild card position. I don't think they can win the AL East. The Orioles, they look like a better team, but the Blue Jays are definitely trying to catch them down. Let's move to the number 21 team, and it goes to Al Avila and the Detroit Tigers. I give them a C+. And really, the Tigers' plan was to stand pat, and they did just so. They didn't want to trade any more of their good prospects, and they didn't want to spend any more money. And they shouldn't have to... They shouldn't have had to in either case. They get Jordan Zimmermann and J.D. Martinez back from the DL, and that will have to solve this as far as moves. However, I think they should have been able to land a back-end starter and another reliever by dealing off their major league roster. So I can't grade them any higher for standing pat here. And really, I would have thought Francisco Liriano, he went to the Blue Jays for relatively cheap in Drew Hutchison, and they also got Reese McGuire and Harold Ramirez. What if Francisco Liriano went to the Tigers, who's a back-end starter? He wasn't going to cost the Tigers that much, and it's a flip of a coin with them because the Tigers' rotation's not that good beyond Jordan Zimmermann. Anibal Sanchez, he has been decent, but they needed a back-end starter. I see another game, J.D. Martinez back, but Jordan Zimmermann and J.D. Martinez, are they going to lead them to the playoffs? Are they going to lead them to a wild-card position? And it's a tough question to answer, and we'll see how it fares on the stretch as Zimmermann and Martinez are back, and that's why I'm giving Al Avila a C+, because he didn't make any moves. They stood pat, did just so, average deadline with no moves. Let's move to our number 22 team, the Pittsburgh Pirates and Neil Huntington. I'm giving them a C, and, you know, the Pirates, they did what they had to do. No matter how painful it was, they dealt in pending free agent Mark Melanson to the Nationals and returned for a solid left-handed reliever in Felipe Rivera and a good left-handed prospect in Taylor Hearn. Then they took the chances on pitchers who, you know, weren't pitching well, making trades for Drew Hutchison, Ivan Nova, and Antonio Bastardo with hopes that pitching coach Ray Searich can work his magic and make them better. Overall, the moves were more about business and taking chances on reclamation projects than about getting back to the postseason. Let's be honest here, okay? I think the Pirates, they still do have a decent chance to make the playoffs this season. And really, what has to happen for the Pirates to make the playoffs, I think, is three things. And three things that are pretty hard to do. The offense, it needs to revert back to the April offense that the Pirates are having, okay? Andrew McCutchen, he needs to step it up. Clint Hurdle unplugged him in this Braves series, and Pirates lost 2 of 3, okay? And Kutch just needs to become Kutch. And if he does that, if he becomes his 2013 self, the Pirates will be going places. Because over the past 3 years when they have made the playoffs, when the Pirates are hot, Andrew McCutchen is hot. And when Andrew McCutchen is hot, the Pirates are hot. usually goes the opposite way. And they're 53-53 right now. 3 games back of the Cardinals and the Marlins for a playoff spot. They are definitely not out of postseason contention at all. The Rockies just scooted ahead of them 2.5 back of that playoff spot. But I like the trade for Drew Hutchinson. Okay, he can be a solid right-handed pitcher, and it is a bit of a reclamation project, but he does have promise. And Ray Searage knows how to take promise and turn it into potential, and then turn that into results on the field. Ivan Nova won 16 games in 2011. I hope, I pray that Saturday, that he will do well against the Reds, and get on track. Because this rotation, honestly, people are looking at it as a sore spot right now. But what I'm looking at it as, it might be a plus coming up. Because number one is going to be Gerrit Cole. And Gerrit Cole, ever since he came back from the DL, has been excellent. I love him. He's a great pitcher. Number two, Jameson Taillon. Ever since he's been called up, he did go on the DL a little bit over the All-Star break, but he has been rock solid. Number three, I think it'll be Ryan Vogelsong. And last night, 6 innings, 1 earned run, and that earned run came on a little bunt single by Eric Ivar that any other, 99 of 100 times he would have gotten him out of home plate, but that didn't happen. And if he can shut it down and help the Pirates, that grizzled veteran Vogelsong was Vogel strong last night for the Pirates. And then Ivan Nova, if he can, you know, be the J.A. Happ of last year for the Pirates, then he could be a nice 4. And then Chad Cole, I think, will take over for Jeff Locke. And he has been good so far for the Pirates this season, too. Tyler Glass now, he'll be coming back from the 15-day DL, hopefully later this month. And I believe he'll take over for Chad Cole. And if he does well, all the people have promised he's going to be doing well. And this Pirates rotation, it could be pretty good. And the bullpen, Felipe Rivero, I love the pickup of him. He can throw the ball 100-plus miles per hour. All he needs to do is control the ball. Arquemus Caminero on the Pirates. He's sort of like Felipe Rivero, except Caminero is a right-hander. He can throw the ball really hard, and that's great. But if you're not spotting the ball, if you're not having control with the ball, you're going to walk people. And really, Caminero, Searage has been telling him, just throw the ball hard, it will come to you. And it has come to him. Felipe Rivero, he just needs to throw the ball hard, get in the strike zone, because that 100-mile-per-hour pitch of his is great. And he was devastating against left-handers. And I'm excited to see him and Taylor Hearn in the future. And then Antonio Bastardo, I love the pickup. I think Ray Searage is going to get him back on track again. He was on the Pirates last year, and he has been okay in his first two appearances with them. And I'm excited to see how Hutchinson, Nova, Bastardo, and Rivera, and Hearn in the future do for the Pirates. I'm excited to see Nova this year. Bastardo will be here next year. Hutchinson will be with the Pirates in the future. And then Felipe Rivero, possible future closer, will be the Pirates through 2021. Definitely very excited to see how they fare and in this Pirates playoff push, because I think they can make the playoffs. I think they will make the playoffs. And Kutch has to be Kutch. The rotation, like I said, it can be solid. And the bullpen needs to get it together a little bit. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we will be grading 23 through 30 on grading all 30 GMs. We need to take a quick break. And we'll be back in a few on Inside MLB.
This podcast is proud to be part of the Blueberry Network. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
We're back in Inside MLB, grading all 30 GMs at the end of the deadline. And we have, since the start of the show, we just have made it from 17 through 22. And hopefully we'll get through 23, maybe to 28 in this next 15 minutes here. And finish it up right after that. So let's get into number 23. And it is the Seattle Mariners. It's Jerry Dipoto. I'm giving him a C. And the Mariners, their best trade was acquiring Dan Vogelbach from the Cubs in exchange for Mike Montgomery. Vogelbach would take over first base for Adam Lind next year and has the potential to be, 25th homer, 85 RBI, 5-hole hitter. They gave up on Wade Miley, trading to the Orioles, and they took a chance on Drew Storen by trading Joaquin Benoit for him. They tried hard to get Zach Cozart from the Reds, but that deal never came to fruition. And Dan Vogelbach, best trade. They gave up Mike Montgomery and like the potential of Vogelbach, 25 homer, 85 RBI, and Lynn's going to be gone. I like Vogelbach in the future for the Mariners. Excited to see what he does next year. Wade Miley, they just had to give up on him. He wasn't pitching well, traded him to the Orioles. Drew Storen, he does have potential, and they traded a bad pitcher, Joaquin Benoit, for another bad pitcher, Drew Storen, hoping a change of scenery would help them out. And I think Drew Storen will be exciting this year for the Mariners as they make a playoff push. And Zach Cozart, he would have fit in nicely, I think, in Seattle. Ketel Marte is a shortstop right now, but I think Zach Kuzma would have been a much better option. I do not know why the deal never came to fruition. Maybe the prospect asking was too high, but I think they could have if Zach Kuzma was on the Mariners, I think they would be a much better team. But Dan Vogelbach, I'm excited to see how he does this year down the stretch and next year in the future for the Mariners. I'm excited to see how Dorn does down the stretch. And I think it was smart giving up on Wade Miley because he's not going to do anything, and you might as well trade him to contender for some prospects. So that's why I'm giving them a C, pretty average, but exciting to see how the few that they did acquire do in the future. Let's move to the number 24 team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Davis Stewart, I'm giving you a C-. And really, the Diamondbacks, they're still on Brad Zegor and Tyler Clipper. Although they got quantity back, they didn't get much quality. And pretty much, I think they need to go into rebuild mode. They traded Zegor, they traded Clipper. They didn't get much back. So, C-, I could have gone lower, but hopefully Zegor does well for the Red Sox and Clipper does well as well. Number 25 team, the Los Angeles Angels. Billy Epler, you get a C-. So the Angels, you know, they made only one significant trade, and it was a gamble, sending Hector Sanchez to the Twins for Ricky Nolasco and Alex Meyer. The key to the deal for the Angels is whether they can figure out how to help Meyer repeat his delivery and improve his command and control to make him a good prospect again. You know, I thought it was a bizarre trade, and though I thought they'd get more for Santiago elsewhere, but they pulled the string. This Angels, you know, franchise is a little bit a mess. But if Alex Meyer, if they can fix him, it would be a pretty good trade. But I think they could have gotten more value elsewhere. But if Alex Meyer becomes great, then they'd be fine with the trade. And I have to give up my first D of the day. And it goes to Cincinnati Reds, Walt Jocketty and Dick Williams. So the Reds, you know, they finally traded Jay Bruce after several attempts over the past couple of years. And the return package led by Dilson Herrera led to some head-scratching around the industry. The Reds' moves differentiated from what the Padres and Brewers did as sellers, with Cincinnati opting for quantity over quality and acquiring no elite prospects. I don't understand it. Dilson Herrera is not going to be something that great. And they traded Jay Bruce, the leading RBI guy in all Major League Baseball, to the Mets and pretty much got nothing in return. So Walt Jogge, Dick Williams, awful trade deadline. Number 27, the Colorado Rockies, is Jeff Bridich. You also get a D. And really, the Rockies, they had a chance to take advantage of sellers' market by trading Carlos Gonzalez for multiple good prospects, but chose instead to hold on to him. Now it'll be interesting to see whether they sign him long-term or move him in the offseason. And listen, they think they're in a playoff race. I get they're only 2.5 games back of the Cardinals and the Marlins for that second wildcard spot, but really, trade Cargo. Get the prospects because you just waited far too long. When Tulo Wiskus traded last trade deadline, everybody thought Cargo's next. Wasn't next in the offseason. Wasn't next this trading deadline. Will he be gone this offseason? I do not know that question. But Jeff Bridich has not been able to pull the string. I do not know why, but he just hasn't. Number 28, Kansas City Royals' Dayton Moore gets a D. So, you know, the Royals, they were planning to sell and even were listening on Wade Davis. But his injury quickly took him off the market. They tried to shop both Kenjis Morales and Edinson Volquez, who are both free agents this winter, but didn't like any of their return offers. The Royals did make one deal, trading the power of outfielder Billy Eibner to the A's for the speed of Billy Burns, in exchange of extra outfielders with each organization getting its preferred tool. So pretty much Dayton Moore said, Billy Burns, come to us. Billy Eibner, gone. Dayton Moore likes speed. Billy Bean likes power, and they just swapped them. I'm excited to see how Billy Burns does next year because they're not going to contend this year. But Billy Burns, he could be something special. Could be a leadoff hitter. Could play center field. He'll be exciting next year. But I don't understand why Dayton Moore didn't sell Morales or Volquez or didn't pull the string on Davis before he got hurt. So that's not really good news there. Number 29, the Philadelphia Phillies. Andy McPhail and Matt Klentak, you get a D. And the Phillies, they had a chance to continue rebuilding by trading star Jeremy Hellickson and closer Jeanmar Gomez, but instead held on to both of them. A huge disappointment based on how well they've been improving the organization's young talent base for the past couple of years. And I thought they were in a full rebuild mode. And obviously they proved that they are still reluctant to go that far. And Phillies fans, they are impatient. And they want this rebuild to go fast. And the fact that they didn't trade Hulks and they didn't trade Gomez is not making this rebuild go any faster. It's making it go slower. Bad decision by McPhail. Bad decision by Klentak. And that's why you get a D. Now, the worst GM at this trade deadline, absolutely failed it. He failed it. Rick Hahn of the Chicago White Sox. And the White Sox, they had a chance to headline the deadline. You like that rhyme there, didn't you? By rebuilding in a 24-hour period like the Yankees did, but decided to hold on to Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Dave Robertson, Todd Frazier, and Melky Cabrera. They had long conversations with many teams, but in the end never had the offers they liked enough to become huge sellers. This organization has been treading water for a long time, and that approach will continue. Look for them to shift gears and to be the stars of the winter meetings come December, when they'll still have the same pieces to trade. So, you know, the White Sox just had pretty much an awful demo. They could have traded Chris Sale, and if they would have traded him, they would have gotten many good prospects in return. We talked about on the show just before the deadline what the White Sox could have gotten in return for Chris Sale, but they decided not to do that. They decided not to trade Jose Quintana, Dave Robertson, Todd Frazier, Melky Cabrera. They could have gotten so much talent for these. Could have went in a 24-hour rebuild like the Yankees, but they decided not to do that. They really aren't in contention. They think they can still get that wild card spot, but it's not going to happen. They better be the star of the winter meetings. Rick Hahn better redeem himself, because if not, the White Sox are going to continue to tread water. They can continue to be a 500 team, get just under it, get just over it, and they'll maybe be in contention for a few months at a time, but they're never going to be anything special at this point. They need to start the rebuild, and that comes with trading Sale, Quintana, Robertson, Frazier, and Melky Cabrera. If they can trade those five players and get the prospects that are worthy of those five players, they can be an exciting team 5 years down the line. But if they don't do that, they're going to continue to have the Cubs just be the stars of Chicago, and the White Sox will continue to be the treading water team that we've known them to be over the past couple of years. So that's been it. It's all 30 GMs I've just graded. We started with CEO Epstein, Jed Hoyer being number one in Chicago, and number 30, Rick Hahn for the White Sox, getting an F. So that just shows where both franchises are right now. And the fact that the Cubs, they went at it. They got Chapman, which was very exciting, and they also got bullpen help here and there with Mike Montgomery, and the White Sox decided to do nothing. Big disappointment, big letdown for the White Sox as Rick Hahn, but we'll see what they do with the winter meetings, because they're not going to contend this year, but we'll see how they do in the future. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we are going to recap the Pirates-Braves series. How did the Braves take 2 of 3 from the Pirates as they won their second home series all year and their first under interim manager Ryan Snicker? That's next.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. You can find out more at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's.com.
We're back in Inside MLB. We're just grading all 30 GMs. And now it's time to switch gears a little bit. We're going to be talking about the Pirates. And we're going to be talking about the past two games and how they lost both games to the Braves, one of the worst teams in the National League. Okay. And I have an article on the website too, MLBinside.com. Go to the news tab. You can check the article out there. But I'm going to talk to you about it here as well. And really, 2 days ago, Jeff Locke started. And I think he just pushed himself out of the rotation. And he did that by going 4 1/3 innings. He pitched 4 1/3, 9 hits, 5 runs, 5 earned, walked 2, and only struck out 1. Definitely not a good start. He got the loss, as he should have gotten the loss. And the thing that really surprised me about this game is the Pirates, they jumped out to a 4-0 lead. In the first inning, it started off with Adam Frazier flying to Nick Markakis. Then you had Polanco getting a single. Gone flew out to Enciarte. But after that, Marte got hit by a pitch, and then Joyce, on his birthday, had a 3-run home run to make it a 3-0 game. Then David Freese got a single. Mercer walked. Fryer walked, and there was a wild pitch that helped Freese score. But after that, Rob Whalen pitched excellent. The bullpen pitched excellent. Whalen, Kroll, Cabrera, Withrow, and Johnson shut down the Pirates after the second inning. Jung Ho Gong got a double in the second, but they had nothing going after that. And the anemic Braves offense did not look anemic at all in that game. They had 15 hits, scored 8 runs, and I think could have been a lot more. I mean, I think this team could have scored double digits in this game, but they did not do so. Again, Jeff Locke, he's out of the rotation in my mind, and this is my rotation for me right now. Number 1, Gerrit Cole. Number 2, Jameson Taillon. Number 3, Ryan Vogelsong. Number 4, Yvonne Nova. And number 5, Chad Kuhl. I think if Nova does well, he will stay in the rotation. If he does not do well, I think it might be seeing how Locke does, seeing how Nova does, or possibly putting Steven Brault into the mix. With Wilfredo Buscon was actually just released, so he will not have a chance to be at the Pirates anymore because Vogelsong came back. And plus, Juan Nicasio, he might also be thrown into the mix, but he hasn't fared that well out of the bullpen, so I think he'll stay in the bullpen. But Chad Cole, I think he'll be the 5-2. But I think the revolving door right now, I think, consists of Ivan Nova. We'll see how he pitches on Saturday, tomorrow. If he does not pitch well, he'll be a part of the revolving door. If he does pitch well, he will not be a part of the revolving door. And the 5 spot, if Nova does pitch well, will be the revolving door. I think it will consist of guys like Chad Cole, who I think deserves to have that 5 spot right now. It'll consist of Jeff Locke. It'll consist of Tyler Glasnow once he comes back. And it'll consist of Steven Brault and possibly Juan Nicasio. And it's pretty much now just see how each one does. You throw them at the wall, and if they stick with them. Because at this point, that's what the Pirates have to do. Their offense, they did not play well at all this series. They were outscored by the Braves in this series. They won the first game 5-3. They lost the second game 8-4, and they lost the final game 5-2. So they never really had a great offensive showing. And when they scored those 5 runs, they sort of stole a game from the Braves. They scored 5 runs on 5 hits, and the Braves scored 3 runs on 10 hits. So they could have been swept easily by this Braves team. Did not happen, but definitely lucky to salvage a game, I think, in the series. And I mean, the best player was Joyce 2 days ago. He was really the only bright spot to me. Go to the bullpen, see how everybody did there. Jared Hughes, he did pitch good 2/3 of an innings. He relieved in the 5th for Jeff Locke, and he did what he's accustomed of doing. He did give up a hit, though. Enner and Ciarte was on 3rd base, and Anthony Rucker got a hit, but Matt Joyce fired Ciarte out at home. So Matt Joyce, definitely great game by him. And then he got Ivar to bounce out to David Freese. So Jared Hughes, he did pitch okay, but Jeff Locke, Hughes were not effective. Juan Nicasio, 2 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, not effective. And Caminero is probably the best run of the bullpen. He pitched the 8th inning in which he 1-2-3 struck out Freddie Freeman. So I think if you can take a positive out of this game, you can take the positive that Arquimedes Caminero was effective, and you can take a positive that Matt Joyce was effective as well. So those are the positives of the game. Not much going there, but I think the Braves have to be impressed with Rob Whalen, though. He really weathered the storm in the first inning, but he shut the Pirates down after that. And I think the Braves also have to be excited about their bullpen because it is a shutdown bullpen. I did not realize how good of a bullpen they have. Let's talk about last night's game. And last night's game was really the most frustrating to me. Okay, the Pirates had a 1-0 lead for a while. They got the 1-0 lead in the 3rd inning. Then the Braves tied it in the 3rd, and they should not have tied it at all. And Ender and Ciarte started off the inning with an infield single to Jordy Mercer. And Ender and Ciarte, he does have pretty good speed, and he extended his hitting streak to 15 games. Jordy Mercer was playing a little bit towards second base because Ender and Ciarte is a lefty. If he was playing in his normal position, and Ciarte would have never gotten base, and they would have never scored. But, yes, so he did allow that single. And then A.J. Pierzynski came up, and he got an infield single as well. No, he did not get an infield single. It was a hit and run, and he pushed the ball through the right side. So first and third, nobody out. Ryan Vogelsong intentionally walked Jace Pierce on 4 pitches. Then Eric Ibar softly bunts it to Ryan Vogelsong, and he tries to shuffle the ball to Mr. Eric Fryer catching, and it did not fare well at all. He didn't get enough leather on the ball and allowed a run to score, making it a 1-1 game. But then he really weathered the inning. Got Freddie Freeman to strike out on a 3-2 pitch with the bases loaded and one out. The best hitter up to bat got him to strike out. Then Matt Kemp comes out to the plate. Deep drive to center field. Starling Marte runs it down, makes an absolutely fantastic catch. That game could have been blown wide open right there, but it was not. So it was 1-1 game at that point. And then you look at the Pirates' opportunities. You go to the 4th inning. Starling Marte had a double with one out. And then Gon struck out while batting. and then you had Harrison on, so it was first and second, two outs, and Mercer Flood, right? Some of their other opportunities, I think, in the sixth. It started off with Eric Ibar making an error, allowing David Freese to get on. Then Matt Joyce walked, first and second, nobody out, and Starling Marte could not put one on the ball, strikeout. It would have been great if he could have. I mean, it probably would have been from lay down a bunt. Then you'd have second and third, nobody out. And then Jung-Ho Gong came up, and he did not do well again. A fielder's choice, and then it was first and third. Joyce was out second, and then Josh Harrison flew out to right. So they could not capitalize in that inning at all. The seventh, they had an opportunity. Jordy Mercer, he singled. And then Eric Fryer could not protect Jordy Mercer. It was a hit and run. He did not make contact, and he was out easily at second. And then one of the strangest plays of the game, John Jaso. He broke his bat, hit a ground ball to Freddie Freeman, and he just stood there. He did not try to run it out. He did not try to beat the throw out at first base. He just stood there like it was a foul ball, and I did not know what he was doing. The replay did not show any explanation, and the seventh, I think, was the worst inning. Eric Fryer could not make contact with the ball. You have to make contact on a hit and run. Jordy Mercer does not have great speed. He was not trying to get a good jump because it was a hit and run. But Eric Fryer could not protect him. And then Jaso, I do not know why they didn't pinch hit Gregory Polanco in that situation, because Gregory Polanco would have ran that ball out. I do not know why John Jaso did not. Then in the eighth, David Freese hit a home run to make it a closer game. But in the eighth was also when the Pirates sort of, I think, gave up the game. Allowed two runs in the seventh and the eighth. And they were all bad earned runs. Listen. Felipe Herrera, he came in the seventh to relieve Ryan Vogelsom, and the inning started off pretty good. He got Nick Marquez to fly out to Matt Joyce. Then Adonis Garcia walked, okay? Then Ender Inciarte in a single, first and second, one out. Now this is where things got bad. Adonis Garcia, he was picked off, and he was picked off easily. Ender Inciarte was also going to second at that point. Felipe Herrera steps off. There's a nice throw to Jung-Ho Gong, and Jung-Ho Gong completely misses the ball, allowing Adonis Garcia to score, allowing the Braves to take the lead, and Ender Inciarte to move up to second at that point. Jung-Ho Gong absolutely failed at that point. He did not do well batting either. He struck out with Starling Marte at second. He grounded into a fielder's choice in a pivotal point of the game, and he had two errors in the game. We'll get to the second one in a minute. But he has not been good for the Pirates lately, and just another example right there. Then some good luck happened next at bat. A.J. Pierzynski lined out to Gong, but then Jeff Francoeur comes out of the plate, singles right up the middle. And if that error never happened, not only would the Pirates have no runs in that inning, but they wouldn't have allowed that second run. And what would have happened at that point is that David Freese home run in the eighth would have put them up 2-1. Now, you go to the eighth inning, and Jung-Ho Gong has an error to start it off. Easy ball right to him. It was an in-between hop, and Eric Ibar was able to get to first base on the play. Eric Ibar went on to steal second base, and then you had the intentional walk in the eighth inning, and Matt Kemp and Eric Ibar went on to score on an error, on an intentional walk. And this game, to me, it could have been a 2-2 game, but that never happened. The ninth, they had a little bit of rally going. Jung-Ho Gong came up trying to redeem himself. He popped the ball up. It was in between Nick Markakis, Jason Peterson, Freddie Freeman. They were all looking at each other, and nobody caught the ball. So that allowed Gong to get on. But then Harrison struck out. Mercer lined out to Jason Peterson. And then Francisco Cervelli pinched it for Fryer, and he grounded out to short to end the game. And a very disappointing series for the Pirates. And if they hope to make the playoffs, they cannot have disappointing road trips like this anymore. They played the Brewers, and they played the Braves. Two of the worst teams in the National League. They should have easily taken 2 of 3 from the Brewers. They got swept. They should have easily taken 2 of 3 from the Braves, and they lose the series. Unacceptable. And if they do want to make a playoff push, they need to play well against the Reds and the Padres at home, and then have a nice West Coast road trip where they go to L.A. and San Francisco. If they can't do that, then this Pirates team may definitely be in trouble. So excited to see the future, but needs to be a lot better than the road trip that they just concluded against the Atlanta Braves. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Mark Teixeira and how he belongs among the elite Yankees first baseman. That's next.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry.com is where listeners and podcasters come together. Check it out at blueberrywithnoes.com.
We're back in Inside MLB. In the show earlier today, we were grading all 30 GMs based on how they did the trade deadline. And then we just talked about the Pirates and how they got off. How Ryan Snicker had got his first home series win of the year, beating the Pirates in those games. So now let's talk about Mark Teixeira and how I think he belongs among the elite Yankees first baseman. And so the top compliment you can really give Mark Teixeira is that his name belongs. When you think of the elite first baseman in New York Yankees history, Teixeira is really worthy of inclusion in that group. The Yankees' tradition at the position dates to Lou Gehrig and has been nearly as much of a staple in the Bronx as the team's pinstripes. The recent vintage has, you know, included Don Mattingly, Tino Martinez, Jason Giambi, and now Teixeira. Next up, I think, is a 23-year-old sweet swinging lefty. The injured Greg Bird is likely to take over the coveted spot as the Yankees' youth movement continues in earnest in 2017. Like many before him, Teixeira will announce his retirement before he planned. As recently as this spring, he talked about playing 5 more seasons. Last year, at this time, he was in discussion for the American League MVP. That feels like a long time ago now. And in 77 games this season, he is hitting .198 with 10 homers and 27 RBIs. His OPS is .627, nearly 250 points worse than his career mark. It was time for him to move on. With injuries the most common theme of his final years, he walked away before anyone told him to go. Teixeira is 36 years old. He loves living in Connecticut. He has done fine work with Harlem RBI, which supports ways for his inner-city kids to play, learn, and grow. Perhaps broadcasting could be in Teixeira's future. He has regularly appeared in humorous internet videos for the ES Network and even co-hosted Mike and Mike in 2014. As a ballplayer, Teixeira had a rare trait. In baseball, it is hard to make your teammates better, but Teixeira, you know, he did that. Saving his infielders countless throwing errors, he won 5 gold gloves, which is nice, but to truly appreciate his defense, you had to watch him every day, scooping balls and stretching far for outs. Teixeira is one of the best fielding first basemen of all time. At the plate, the excessive shift just crushed Teixeira's average. He arrived to the Yankees after hitting .308 in 2008. His first year as a Yankee, batted .292. But from then on, he lived in the .250s or worse. He would not or could not adjust, saying he was paid to hit home runs, and so he had to try to pull the ball or he wouldn't be effective. He didn't have many signature moments at the plate. He hit a game-winning homer in Game 2 of the 2009 ALDS, but batted just .222 with a .659 OPS in 40 postseason games with the Yankees. His failures were often overlooked as Alex Rodriguez was always the far bigger target. Teixeira's retirement is another reminder, as if the Yankees needed one, that the glory days are behind this current group. Rodriguez is still around for the time being, but in clubhouse present only. C.C. Sabathia will ride out his contract through next year, and then he, too, will likely be an ex-Yankee. Teixeira arrived with an 8-year, $180 million deal after spurning the Boston Red Sox. It put him right in the middle of the rivalry from the first pitch. His tours around the AL East were not filled with love. He is still booed in Baltimore because he never signed with the Orioles, though he grew up in Maryland. And all in all, Teixeira's signing will go down as not a perfect one, but pretty good when you consider the 2009 championship. Teixeira, one of the best power-hitting switch hitters in history with 404 homers, had an excellent overall career. Prior to the Yankees, he played mostly for the Texas Rangers with brief stops in Atlanta and Anaheim. His career should fall short of ending up in Cooperstown, though. Bird will be given the opportunity to win the first base job, but he will not be on scholarship. While Bird has missed the entire season, Tyler Austin, he's a 24-year-old right-handed hitter, has become a prospect again, producing a 1,055 OPS in 52 games. Austin will likely receive a major league call up this year to apply for the job. Whoever ends up next at first, he will have expectations to meet. The likes of Gehrig, Mattingly, Tino, now Teixeira. The last one may be even more appreciated now that he is leaving. And Teixeira, he did have a good career, did announce his retirement today. He will finish out the season, but he does belong in that elite group. He does belong with Gehrig. He does belong with Mattingly, Martinez, and all the Yankees first baseman greats. So he does belong there, but did have a pretty decent career. He was on pace to be a Hall of Famer when he began his career with the Yankees, but that shift really just killed him. And the fact that the ownership said he was being paid to hit home runs and not for average, that's probably led to the demise of his career. Let's talk about Jordan Zimmermann now and how he's finally getting positive news after MRI, and he's likely to avoid the DL. So Detroit Tigers pitcher Jordan Zimmermann likely will avoid going back on the stable list after getting positive results from his MRI, a source confirmed today. The 30-year-old starter, who started yesterday, for just the first time since June 30th, was pulled after giving up six runs in just 1 2/3 innings, matching the shortest start of his career. After the game, Tigers manager Brad Ausmus said Zimmermann was experiencing tightness in his lat muscle and was sent for tests. Before the game, Zimmermann was activated after spending more than a month on the disabled list as he recovered from a right neck strain. He is scheduled to throw a bullpen session on Sunday, and his next scheduled start is Tuesday against the Seattle Mariners. He's the Tigers' number two starter right now, and he has a 6.44 ERA since May 1st after posting the MLB best .55 ERA in April. Fox Sports and the Detroit Free Press earlier reported that Zimmermann would likely avoid the deal. And that's good news for the Detroit Tigers because he just was on the deal, and he needs to, you know, catch fire again down the stretch if he wants to succeed. So I'm excited to see how Jordan Zimmermann does down the stretch since he will likely avoid the deal. And this side session on Sunday will definitely be an important one as he looks to help out the Detroit Tigers down the stretch, and hopefully he will do just so and help the Detroit Tigers possibly win the AL Central, and then hopefully, if they do not do that, make a wild card spot. So that's the deal with Jordan Zimmermann and the Detroit Tigers. All right, we are going to welcome a caller onto the show. So welcome to Inside B. How are you doing today? Hello? I will put him on mute for now. But let's get into our next little talk here. And as I said earlier in the show, Aaron Sanchez, he was going to be going to the bullpen, but they flipped the course. And the Blue Jays is Aaron Sanchez. He's going to actually stay in the rotation as a pitcher, but it will be a six-man rotation. And he will remain a starting pitcher as part of a six-man rotation, reversing the team's decision to shift him to the bullpen in an effort to limit his innings. The announcement came when general manager Ross Atkins spoke with reporters on Thursday. On Monday, the Blue Jays had said Sanchez would transition to the bullpen the same day the team acquired Francisco Liriano from the Pittsburgh Pirates. The decision to keep the All-Star in the rotation came after midweek discussions with the team staff and players. And I really think the biggest thing was input from different people after something was more concrete or closer to it, and the fact that Liriano was really open to anything, and he needed to be open to anything because he's not going to be great in Toronto. So this six-man rotation will help Sanchez's innings be limited and help out with that too. And I think the more they thought about the potential of six-man rotation was not just benefiting Aaron Sanchez, but it was about benefiting the others in rotation at the point of the season because it's going to help limit everybody's innings, hopefully make them more effective down the stretch, and allow Aaron Sanchez to stay because they need him down the stretch if they have a chance of making the playoffs. We're going to try to bring that caller back on. So 111 area code, you're live on Inside MLB. How are you doing today? Hello? All right, so that was called that last opportunity with him. But let's talk a little bit more about Aaron Sanchez. And now he has had a breakout year in his first full season on the mound for Toronto. He leads the American League with a 2.71 ERA and is 11-1 in 21 starts. And he has been absolutely excellent for the Blue Jays. And this breakout year is definitely very important for them. And I love the decision to keep him in the rotation. If they did not decide to do this, I did not think that the Blue Jays would be as good. And really, the Blue Jays, what they want to do is they want to manage his innings, as he has already at a career high, 139 and a third of the season. But as I said, the window of opportunity is closing. And if they want to contend this year, if they want to have a chance at the World Series title, they need to keep him in the rotation. They need to have the six-man rotation. And it is smart. I think Liriano wisely decided to say yes to the six-man rotation. And again, he's at 139 and a third of the season. His previous high was 133 and a third between AA, AAA, and the majors in 2014. And sometimes you got to test this kid's arm. Every young pitcher is going to most likely go through Tommy John surgery. It's likely. And Aaron Sanchez, I don't think, will be any different from that. But the fact that they now have him back in the rotation. I think he needs to just – they shouldn't worry about longevity right now. They should worry about contending right now. And worst-case scenario, he obviously does get hurt or something. But I don't think they're going to be able to be this good next year. So their window of opportunity is closing, and they need to capitalize now. A little about Liriano, who went 35-25 for Pittsburgh from 2013 to 2015 while helping the Pirates to three straight playoff berths. He has struggled this season, posting a 6-11 record with a 5.64 ERA. He has signed through 2017 and is due $13.66 million next season. So, Aaron Sanchez, I'm happy for the Blue Jays. Smart decision on their part, and hopefully that will help them down the stretch in making a playoff push. And a little bit of a scheduling update. Monday, I believe we're planning to do a noon show. John Lester, he will be joining us. His agent just has to confirm with me today, but he said 99% likely that it will be a done deal. So John Lester will be coming on the show on Monday, and we have that 111 caller back. I'm going to try to bring him on. You are live on Inside MLB.
Hey,
how are you doing today?
Hey, Benton. I'm good. How's it going?
Good.
I was told, did you hear Mark Teixeira is retiring? Did you hear that, Mark Teixeira?
Yes, I did. We just talked about that recently.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and talk about how great a career he had. He's a very underrated, player when you look at the numbers, when you look at the stats. You know, he played on a lot of great teams, so I think that overshadows it. But, yeah, just a great guy, too. He gave back to the community a lot. I'm from the area he grew up in, and, yeah, he's just a great guy, man.
Just a great
all-around guy.
Great guy, too. And I think that he will go down as one of the elite Yankees first basemen. And I think that he can be mentioned with Lou Gehrig, Don Mattingly, Tino Martinez, and the likes of those guys because he did have a great Yankees career, winning 5 gold gloves. He never really had that clutch moment while batting, but over the course of his Yankee career and his whole career with the Red Sox, Anaheim, and Texas, definitely a great career for Mark Teixeira.
Yeah, absolutely. So how you been? I haven't talked to you in a while. The show
I'm
seems
doing good.
To be doing well again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't heard you on the air in a while. Looks like you changed tires. Doing great, though, man. I love the
Thank
articles
you.
You're reading. Great stuff, man. When are you going to be on next?
Monday, we are actually John Lester. He's going to be on the show, I believe, at noon we are looking to do it at.
John Lester?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. I will definitely be tuning in, man. We'll have a great weekend. Love the show.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. So, yeah, John Lester, he will be joining us Monday, I believe at noon, for our annual Stand Up to Cancer show. He did deal with cancer in 2006, but has recovered since then and has helped out the community, mainly in 2011 when he released a wine brand that would go to help the Hutchinson Cancer Research Center where he was treated, and as well as creating the Never Quit Foundation with his wife that benefits children with cancer and helping to work for a cure and helping to improve the quality of life while they are in treatment. So I'll give you a preview of the show for Monday. Without further ado, here is that preview.
I stand up for my dad.
I stand up for my mom, who's the strongest person I know.
I stand up for survivors like me.
I stand up to change the odds.
I stand up for Granny. She was a friend and a role model.
I stand up for Marshall Smith, one of my good friends.
I stand up for my grandmother, Anna Nana Brown.
I stand up for Ellie.
I stand up for Susana, Carlos, and Julio.
I stand up for those who stood up for me.
We stand up for Nancy.
I stand up for my friends.
For the kids.
For my baby sister.
And all of baseball stands up for Tony Gwynn.
No matter who we are or what we do, we are all touched by cancer.
I stand up to cancer.
So please do tune in on Monday. I'm thinking it will be a noon show, but if any scheduling conflicts come in, I'll post the showtime on MLBinside.com. So head over to that Monday morning to see what time the show will be at. But if nothing is on there, it will be at noon. So please join us for that. That's going to do it for our show today. I'll see you Monday at noon. But until then, have a great weekend.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. It's a place where listeners and podcasters come together. Find out more at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's.com.